Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Well, summertime is here, and it's time to relax by the pool or perhaps in the backyard with a cold drink and a good book. It's our summer reading show today with book reviewer Nancy Pearl. Pearl is the former Tulsa librarian who now reviews books for us in NPR's Morning Edition. She's the author of the Booklust series of books of recommended reading and is now the curator for Amazon's new Booklust Rediscoveries, formerly out-of-print books that are now released in new editions. She joins us today with a list of summer reading ideas for you and your favorite person who loves books. Nancy Pearl is my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Nancy Pearl, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure as always, Rich.
We always talk about summer reading. I'm going to ask you, you know, you're reading books all the time. Is summertime a time when you read more or less?
It's probably a time when I read more. I think I don't read differently. Now that I think about it, I think that probably I just read at a steady rate all year. but I don't, it's not that I do lighter books in the summer. A lot of people think about summer reading as like beach reading. My only concern about reading at the beach is to take a book that I know I can easily replace because it's always going to get, you know, waterlogged and filled with sand. So that's my only change if I'm taking a book to the beach. But normally my reading doesn't change.
Well, as I look across this list of books, I would say there might be a couple you could take to the beach, but this is a pretty serious list of books here. And I guess that we're seeing a lot of good stuff come out.
We are. And at the end of 2011, the beginning of 2012, some really, really, really good books.
Well, the first on your list is A Partial History of Lost Causes. That's a great title.
Isn't that a great title? It's a first novel, and it is the story of a young woman whose father has just died a pretty terrible death from Huntington's disease, and she has a very high percentage chance of getting that disease herself, and she does not want to cause any of her family she doesn't want to have her mother suffer again through the death of a loved one. And when she's going through her father's papers, she finds a letter that her father has written to this chess champion, Russian chess champion. And in the letter, he says to the chess champion, "How do you cope with games that you know are lost? How do you go forward?" And the main character, the young woman, Irina, decides she's going to go to Russia and find this chess champion and see what his answer is to that question. And it's a book that goes back and forth in time from before the fall of the Soviet Union through about 2006. And the Russian chess champion, who was this brilliant kid, is based a little bit on his chess experiences, at least, are based a little bit on Kasparov's chess experiences. And Irina goes to meet him and becomes involved in his really kind of futile stand against, he decides to run against Putin in one of the elections in Russia. So it's got a lot in it, and you don't have to know anything about chess. It's really just a fabulous character study.
And that is a great question. You know, what do you do when you know you've lost the game, but you still have to finish it out?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that is by Jennifer Dubois.
Right.
A Partial History of Lost Causes. Up next is a book I know you're very familiar with. It's a book by Rhianne Ellis. And this is part of the Nancy Pearl imprint, I guess?
It is. It's the second book in the Booklust Rediscovery series, and that's a series that I'm doing with Amazon Publishing. I'm bringing back into print a bunch of my favorite out-of-print titles from 1960 through the early 2000s. And Afterlife was one of my favorite novels. It went out of print very early. It's the story of a young woman who grows up with her mother in a small town in central New York State that is a town that was set up to be a home to psychics and mediums, palm readers, tarot card readers, everybody who has a connection to the spirit life. And in this book, which is a mother and daughter story, it's a psychological thriller, it's just many, many different ways of reading this one novel. But it's the story of a young woman trying to understand if she has any psychic abilities, and if she does, what they are, if she doesn't, what she's going to do with her life. But it begins with this line, Rich, which I loved from the moment I read it. The first line of this book is, "First, I had to get his body into the boat."
You know something's going to happen from
you
a start
do.
Like that.
You do. And you know it. So it's not really a whodunit, because you know she had to get his body into the boat, but it's really a why done it. And they're just wonderfully done.
Now,
and I'm so happy it's back in print. So.
And I remember us talking about this when this book first came out. This didn't come out that long ago.
2000, yes. And so we were talking about it.
Well, we were talking about it, but I guess time does compress, doesn't it? 12 years ago. Well, there
yes,
you go.
Right.
Rhianne Ellis's Afterlife, the second imprint in the Booklust series that Nancy is editing, or I don't know, curating, I guess.
I call it curating.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Well, what's next?
The next book is a wonderful novel by an Irish novelist, Anne Enright, called The Forgotten Waltz. And this is the story of a man and a woman and adultery. And it's told from the point of view of the woman. It is exquisitely written. This is the kind of book that you just want to linger over the sentences because they're so beautiful. Many people I've talked to about this book have said they really did not like the main character at all. I found her totally understandable. I found her voice so real, and the issues that she raises about this affair that she's involved in, and how it's sort of tentacles spread out to include the man, her lover's daughter, her relationship with that girl, what's going to happen, and it's all set against the kind of fall of the Celtic dragon, Ireland being, you know, so economically, doing so well economically, and at the time this book is set, which is the present time, Ireland's economy has really started tanking.
Yeah.
And so that's the kind of background to this book as well. But, what a wonderful novel.
Now, you said that a lot of the people didn't like this main character. Is it just because, she's the adulterer in this, you think? Do you think it's sort of a... Think it's a morality issue, or what?
I think maybe it's a morality issue. I think also it's that Anne Enright, the author, was smart enough not to make her entirely likable. She's not an entirely likable person. I mean, all of us have aspects of ourselves that are not, as entirely likable as other aspects of ourselves.
Hopefully the whole makes up for the small package.
Yes, hopefully it does. And in this book, I thought it did for the main character. And I don't need to love the characters that I'm reading about. I need to have something about them to hold on to and to care about. And with this, I did.
I tell you, you're absolutely right. You know, if you cannot have something that you connect into that character, it is really hard to read a book where the character... Or at least the character opposite that character,
right.
The antagonist, if you will, from a literary point of view, has something you can latch onto, even though you know that maybe that antagonist is going to lose in the end.
Yes.
You know, at least you can root for
it. Right, exactly.
If you don't like the main character.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now that's The Forgotten Waltz by Anne Enright. Up next, we have Ben Fountain's Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk.
Rich, this is maybe one of the best novels I've read this year. It's a first novel. Ben Fountain wrote a collection of short stories last year that was very, very well regarded. But this novel just absolutely blew me away. It's the story of, it takes place basically on one day in Dallas, Texas, at Texas Stadium, where the Dallas Cowboys play. And the Billy Lynn is the main character. He's 19 years old. He and the rest of his platoon of men, small group of men, have just returned from Iraq as kind of conquering heroes. This is early in the Iraq War, as conquering heroes, because they survived this horrific firefight with the Iraqis. And embedded in there during that fight was a photographer and a reporter who filmed everything. And you know, their exploits have been played and replayed on Fox television over and over and over again. And they are now being sent on a tour of to raise support for the Iraq War, a tour of the United States, where they're greeted as conquering heroes. But on this day, which is Thanksgiving Day, they're in Dallas, and they are going to have the opportunity of going down during halftime. Of course, they're all looking forward to this, but it's the story of this 19-year-old kid who's trying to understand that in 2 days he's going back to the hell that he left in Iraq. But for this week that he's been in the United States, where they've all been wined and dined and feted, and somebody wants to make a movie about them, and that kind of disparity. And again, the writing in this, when I'm reading a book, I mark my favorite passages with these little silver darts. And this book and another one on this list are so thick with these markers. I've doubled the size because I put in so many of these little darts where I want to remind myself of how wonderful it is. I'm just going to read just this little bit where Billy Lynn is talking about, thinking about what he's encountering in Dallas Stadium. And he says, the Bravos, which is the name of that group of men who have come home, the Bravos speak from the high ground of experience. They are authentic. They are the real. They have dealt much death and received much death and smelled it and held it and slopped through it in their boots, had it spattered on their clothes and tasted it in their mouths. That is their advantage. And given the masculine standard America has set for itself, it is interesting to how few actually qualify. Why we fight. Yo, who is this we? Here in the Chicken Hawk nation of blowhards and bluffers, Bravo always has the ace of bloods up its sleeve.
Mm,
yeah. Isn't that great?
It is good. This kind of reminds me, you know, in the last decade or so, there have been all these stories of World War II where, like, you know, in the book The Pacific, it talked about the hero of Guadalcanal coming back and sort of being made into a hero.
Right.
The guys that lifted the flag at Iwo Jima, there's been tales of how they dealt with this sort of sudden fame being thrust back into this utter alien world from where they had been. So it sounds like it's sort of in that tradition.
It is, and there are many comparisons that can be made to Catch-22, another World War II novel.
Yeah.
But here's one more line that I just have to say. Billy is thinking this after he's talked to all of these, you know, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys and all of his friends and the very, very wealthy people he's meeting. He says, this is what he truly envies of these people, the luxury of terror as a talking point.
Huh. Oh, wow.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's tough.
This is a fabulous, fabulous novel.
That's Ben Fountain's Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. My guest today is Nancy Pearl, our longtime book reviewer here on Studio Tulsa. She joins us to talk about some great summer reading. And this is not, some of it's not light reading. It's really, and I'm looking down the list there. We got some great biographies coming up here. But up next is a gentleman known as a young adult novelist, but I think all ages are finding his books to be really interesting, and that is John Green.
And his newest book is The Fault in Our Stars, and this is a book that's as complex and has as well-developed characters as any adult novel you're going to find. And I'm not going to tell you anything about this book because I don't want to give away anything about the plot. I want people to encounter what happens to the two main characters, Augustus and Hazel, who are both teens, as they read the book. I just want to say that I read this book probably 6 months ago now. I read it in manuscript form, and I have not been able to forget Augustus and Hazel. I wish I could meet both of them.
And, of course, we should mention John Green has got such a fan club among teens and young adults. you know, he's very web savvy. If you just Google John Green, you're going to run into him on the web. He's doing videos all the time. And just in a really remarkable young man and a really good writer, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Maybe one of the top writers for teens today. Yeah. But each book gets better and better and better of his.
John Green, The Fault in Our Stars. Up next, you have a book by Nick Harkaway.
Nick Harkaway happens to be John le Carré's son, but he is not writing in the same genre as his father did. That is, no spy novels for him. He is writing fantasy and science fiction. And his first book, which was one of my very favorite books, was The Gone Away World, which was pretty much dystopian science fiction and absolutely fabulous. And the second book, Angel Maker, which is just out, is pretty much fantasy. And I would say that anyone who is a fan of Neil Gaiman's novels, especially Neverwhere, will really love this book. It's a book about a sought-after object. It's about a man named Joe Spork. What a name. And his involvement with this object that it seems as though everybody wants to get their hands on, and why the object is so important. It's one of those thick fantasy novels that you just kind of sink into, and you're just carried away with the plot, with the nice writing, with the interesting characters. It's just a winner all the way around.
Now, do we know why it's so important to get a hold of?
We learn.
So it's a wonderful sense of discovery as the book goes along.
Absolutely.
Well, that's Nick Harkaway's Angel Maker. Up next, Eric Linklater, Poets Pub.
Poets Pub is another book that I have a connection with because this was one of the first 10 Penguin books, Penguin novels, ever published. It was published in the 1930s. And it has long been out of print. And when I was talking to a friend who works at Penguin, I said, oh, you guys should reprint Poets Pub. It's so funny. It's just one of my favorite books. And they did. And they asked me if I would write the introduction to it. So in this new edition that's just out from Penguin Classics, which has a fabulous cover, there's Poets Pub with my little introduction in it. But this is, as I say in my introduction, one of the funniest books I've ever read. And it's the story of a poet, a very bad poet, and we know he's a bad poet because we get examples of his poetry in here, who takes over running an inn in a small British town, the Pelican Pub. And this is the story of all of the various people who come to stay at the Pelican Pub and what happens to them and what happens to the main character's poetry, his desire to be a famous poet. This book, I have to say, has one of the best car chases that I have ever read about. In a book.
We think of car chases as being film devised, not
I know, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But when you read this and you read about all the cars that are involved and the types of vehicles that are involved in this chase, where they're all trying to catch up to one of the characters who has absconded with something. But this is the sort of book that has Russian spies and newspaper magnates. And of course, this poet and his best friend and the best friend's wealthy mother, all of these people just fill up the plot of this book, and it is hysterically funny.
Now, from your premise, it sounds like it could be like one of these BBC comedies, you know.
I think it absolutely could.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the little small town, the eccentric people, townspeople,
yep.
Some rich, some poor, some, you know, in between, all meeting at the pub, and eccentricity is sort of mainstream.
Right. Yes. And the main character's name is Saturday because he was the seventh son and they named all their boys after the days of the week.
He really didn't have a chance, did he?
No, he didn't. But this book is so wonderful. It's so much fun.
Poets Pub by Eric Linklater.
Yeah.
Up next, a very different book, and this was the late Manning Marable, his incredible biography of Malcolm X, A Life of Reinvention.
And I think that, what Marable did in this book was give us the final word on Malcolm X. I think that this is a book that should be required reading for everyone because it really gives us a sense of this very important man, this central figure in the history of civil rights in America. And he had really unparalleled access to papers, to people who would talk to him in writing this book. And it clears up a lot of the misconceptions that arose about Malcolm X after the autobiography of Malcolm X was published. And it turns out that Alex Haley, who was Malcolm X's co-writer on the autobiography of Malcolm X, really stretched the truth quite a bit in many places, it appears.
For example?
In that autobiography. Well, it presented Malcolm X in a much different light than the real person was. And it especially Marable's book talks about his murder and who was responsible and what happened. I think this is the kind of book, the problem with doing book reviews, I think, always is that my wish would always be to just say, here's a great book, trust me, read it, because I never want anybody to approach a book with preconceptions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so this is one of those books that so much is revealed about Malcolm X and the kind of person that he was, and of course, you know, his life, his years in Detroit, which is where I'm from, were especially interesting to me.
What the sort of generic view of Malcolm X's life remain intact, the fact that he sort of grew up as a street hustler, was imprisoned, he converted to Islam, to originally the black Muslims under Elijah Muhammad, broke with that to sort of turn to true Islam.
Right.
Learned a different version of love and tolerance, and then was gunned down. I mean,
that's still the basic life, right? Yes, that's the outline. Absolutely. So that hasn't changed. I think what Marable has done is offer us a different interpretation of those various points.
All right. Well, that's Manning Marable's Malcolm X, A Life of Reinvention. From a 20th century icon, we go back, I don't know, a couple hundred years to Robert Massey, who never writes a thin little history. And this is Catherine the Great, A Portrait of a Woman by Robert Massey, best known for Dreadnoughts and books about the royal families. And now he's turned to the Russian royal family.
Well, he began, I think he's best known, Robert Massey is best known for his Pulitzer Prize winning Nicholas and Alexandra.
Oh, of course, yes.
Which was a fabulous, fabulous book. And Catherine the Great, Portrait of a Woman. This is one of those books when you sometimes hear people say, oh, it reads like a novel. This book reads like a novel. Oh, my gosh, it is impossible to put this book down because it is so interesting. And Catherine the Great was such a fascinating person. I mean, she arose from a minor royalty in Austria to become the empress, really, of all the Russias. And in doing so, what Robert Massey has done is just really given us a good example of where biography and history meet. You know, this is a book that tells you as much about the history of Russia as it does about Catherine the Great. And, oh, my gosh, the descriptions of her dresses and the jewels and set against her friendship with Erasmus, for example, how educated she was, her interest in improving the lot of the serfs in Russia. I mean, this book is just absolutely wonderful.
And of course, when we're reading about someone from that long ago, we have to know the circumstances of where she came from, what life was like, what was life like for nobility, for royalty, for the average person, too, and I assume Massey does that.
He does it absolutely, just wonderfully well. And here again, you know, I think he's puncturing some of the things that we think we know about Catherine the Great and her salacious nature. So we get a much better picture of the woman herself.
All right. That's Robert Massey's Catherine the Great, Portrait of a Woman. What's next?
Next is Steph Penny's The Invisible Ones. This is one of the two mysteries that I put on this list. And I loved this mystery because it's set in England, and it's set among the travelers, or as we would call them, the gypsies. And there's a girl disappears, and the main character, the detective, because he has gypsy blood, is assigned to the case. So in addition to it being a really good mystery, it does what I always like mysteries to do, give me an insight into another culture or another way of life or another time period. And this is Steph Penny's second mystery. The first one I went back to reread after I had enjoyed this one as much as I did, and still didn't find it as compelling as The Invisible Ones.
All right.
An excellent mystery.
Steph Penny's The Invisible Ones. Very quickly, let's go ahead and talk about C.J. Sansom's Dissolution.
This is another mystery, and this is set during the reign of Henry VIII. It's the first in a series. The main character is Matthew Shardlake, who is a lawyer and a hunchback, and he goes to work for or does favors for Thomas Cromwell. And so you get a picture of Thomas Cromwell in this book that complements Hilary Mantel's portrait of the man in her two books about the same time period. But Dissolution, once you read these five books in this series, and I keep waiting and waiting and waiting for the sixth one to come out, I can't wait, they're so good. You feel as though you could get a master's degree in Tudor history. They're that good. I mean, it really evokes the time and the place. And, of course, the first one is set around the dissolution of the monasteries when Henry VIII dissolved the Catholic Church and set up the Church of England with himself as the head of it. Fabulous.
Interesting. This sounds like a mystery novel that you're going to learn a lot of history in addition to having a mystery at the heart of it.
Again, yes, yeah, totally.
Well, you can visit the list of books on our website. Nancy, have a great summer and a great summer of reading. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
Nancy Pearl is our longtime book reviewer here on Studio Tulsa, and she is the author of the four Book Lust titles in her series of recommended reading, and now the curator for Amazon's new Book Lust Rediscovery series, featuring formerly out-of-print books released in new editions. If you want more information about the books we talked about today, the list is available on our website at publicradiotulsa.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.